always a complete delight to enter into this Sangham with all of you, and especially to go a little bit deeper in our process of finding the real me, the self beyond words, the I am and the one even beyond I am. So, now as we begin, you can find yourself a posture, a comfortable posture, meaning that if you're in a chair, you have something behind your back to support your back, or if you're on the floor, you have a cushion or a couple of blankets or something to make sure that your hips are higher than your knees. And if there's something that you need, your mantras or an extra cushion or a shawl, this is a good time to get it. And we're going to start today by going through the basics of posture in a kind of a systematic way, and then we'll just return to them as each meditation progresses. So you can start by pulling up the skin on your buttocks, pulling back the skin on your buttocks, and then rolling in the skin on your thighs. I find it's a very good idea to start each meditation session by setting your posture in this very deliberate way. And of course, as the session goes on, your body is going to shift and change. The force of gravity will pull you out of the initial upright posture. But the more you can set the blueprint at the beginning of the session, at the beginning of meditation, the more easily your body will begin to align itself to that blueprint. So lift up the side of the body by placing one hand on each side of your rib cage and literally lifting up manually. And then be very aware of the feeling of your shoulder blades as they come onto the back, as they release down onto the back, so that you're giving yourself the experience of the lifted chest, so the breath can come in easily, filling up the upper chest, middle chest, lower chest. We're not going to be doing that kind of deliberate pranayama style breathing during this class, but at the very beginning, as you're setting your posture, it's again very helpful to just notice how the air can come into the lungs more easily when the chest is held upright and lifted. And now take the sides of the ears back, and you can use your hands, your fingertips, to do this if you like. And then now we're going to take a moment to go through a subtler, what I would call a non-physical alignment process that some of you are familiar with. So for those of you who are not, I want to say that this particular process, it's an imaginative process, does actually line you up with the forces that run through the universe as time and space. It's an extraordinarily subtle but very, 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 very effective practice for grounding. So begin by having the sense that you're sitting in the center of a cross. Let's say the cross is right on the floor, and both arms of the cross actually intersect at your perineum, that little knob of flesh that's like a tiny protuberance between the anus and the sexual organ. The perineum, as many of you know, is the part of your body that in subtle anatomy is the seat of kundalini, the place where kundalini rests inside the body. So it's a very significant part of the body. It's, in one sense, the sacred center of the body, and therefore, as we align ourselves with the subtle cross, with the horizontal axis, the horizontal arm of the cross, and the arm of the cross that runs forwards and backwards, we're actually aligning ourselves through this sacred center at the root chakra. So both arms of the cross intersect the perineum, and one arm of the cross runs through the buttocks. It actually bisects the sit bones, running in a horizontal direction. The other arm of the cross runs forward and backwards. So just tune yourself into it for a moment. Feel your way into the sense of a subtle cross, the X axis at the base of your spine, the base of your posture. And have the feeling that it is actually supporting you on your seat, just the way one of those old-fashioned X-shaped Christmas tree stands holds up the Christmas tree. And now, very slowly and very consciously, let your torso sway from side to side, from one buttock to the other, with the sense that you're swaying from side to side, aligning yourself with the horizontal arm of the cross. And see if you can tune into the sense of this horizontal line that holds your body in a natural alignment. Now, swaying very gently forwards and backwards, see if you can get a sense of the other arm of the cross, which runs from front to back. And have the recognition, perhaps just in imagination, perhaps it might actually occur to you as an insight, that the forward and backward arm of the cross runs off into infinity, into the infinite future in front of you, and behind you it runs off into the infinite past. And in the same way, the horizontal arm of the cross runs into infinite space on both sides of you. So you're sitting poised in the midst, in the present moment, in this place, in literally the here and now. And you're going to become aware now of the vertical axis, which runs from the perineum right up through the center of the body. So, again, the vertical axis, it's called the Y axis, runs from the perineum through the center of the pelvic girdle, up through the lower abdomen, the upper abdomen, through the solar plexus. It runs up through the very center of the chest, the center of the neck, up through the crown. And you can feel that the upper part of this Y-axis actually rises up through the crown and moves up into the sky, up into the Milky Way, into the very center of the galaxy. And the lower end of the Y-axis moves down into the Earth. So your body is literally poised between these three axes, sitting squarely on the ground, held firmly in place by the cross on which the base of your body is poised, aligned between Earth and Heaven, on the vertical line, on the vertical axis. And with the sense of your body aligned in this way, see if you can allow these axes, the X-axis and the Y-axis, to hold you firmly in place. And then bring your attention to the breath, allowing the breath to flow very gently into the heart, into the center of the chest, into the very center of the body, the place where, according to the old traditions, Earth and Heaven meet in the heart center, meet in the Ananda Kunda, as it's called, the seat of bliss, the seat of joy in the subtle heart. You know, last week we practiced with a sense of presence at the back of the head. This week we're going to practice with a sense of presence at the back of the heart. And I'm going to ask you to be very conscious of what happens within your awareness when you allow yourself to practice the I am from the heart, from the back heart. So as the breath flows in and out, feel your attention moving with the inhalation in the center of the chest, into the center of the with the exhalation, let your sense of the inside of the heart energy, the inside of the heart space, become more and more present, more and more of a felt sense. Just staying for a moment with the breath moving into the heart. The inhalation touching the heart. The exhalation expanding your felt sense of the heart. Now, as the breath flows in and out, with the inhalation, see if you can take your attention backward, back towards the back of the heart, and have the feeling that the heart opens towards the back, and you become aware of a presence at your back. And this benign unfolding presence, like a hand at your back, stretches out behind you. You don't even have to know how far behind you it stretches. But in a very gentle way, in a very trusting way, allow the inhalation to flow into the heart, in through the heart, in towards the back. And with the exhalation, just let yourself feel that the back of the heart opens for you. And you become aware of this presence at the back heart. This presence, we could say, of the great heart supporting you behind you. And with your awareness flowing with the breath, sensing the presence at the back of the heart, we're going to chant the invocation and prayer. Results. May our practice give us the power to be of real benefit to others. May it help each of us overcome our obstructions and delusions. May this practice clear away obstacles on the path. May it propel us to the experience of enlightenment now and in the future. closed and this sense of presence at your back. Just allow yourself to entertain the experience of I am. You can let this thought, I am, flow in with the breath. And then with the exhalation, just let yourself rest in the felt sense of the space that arises in the mind at the end of I am. This I am thought, I am without an object, is the resting place of your mind. And as the breath is drawn into the heart, as the breath flows into the heart, into the space at the back of the heart, you let that I am awareness flow in with the breath. And then just open to the space that it leaves. The felt sense of the reverberating echo of I am. The awareness I am reverberates. Each breath allows your attention to settle a little bit more into the sense of spaciousness at the back of the heart, into this sense of presence supporting you from behind. And as you become present to the awareness I am in the space of the heart, be very gentle and allowing with the thoughts and images that arise. Thoughts and images, perhaps you can begin to see, are arising and subsiding within the space of I am, within the space of the heart, within the awareness, the beingness that is the real meaning of I am. Let yourself nestle into the I am thought, into the great heart, into the spaciousness at your back. As you let yourself be present in the I am, recognizing perhaps that even as thoughts are arising and subsiding, that the I am thought and the space that arises at the end of it, will at any moment that you touch it, that you attend to it, create its own experience, its own moment of tranquility and being. Ask yourself, without thoughts, without emotions, without memories, without images, without intentions, without associations, what am I? and rest in what arises. What am I without thoughts, without emotions? What am I without memories? Again, just asking the question, noticing what arises in response, that moment when awareness, surprised, reveals itself. That moment when what you are without thoughts, what you are beyond emotions, what you are as ground, what you are as the ever-present beingness behind all thoughts, all emotions, the water beneath the waves of thoughts, just let yourself be surprised. Without thoughts, without ideas, without emotions, without memories, without intentions, without associations, what really am I? What really am I? And if the question becomes distracting or confusing or too mental, come back to the breath and the I am thought. And especially to your sense of being present in the back heart. To your sense of resting in the back heart. And notice, is that sense of being, the sense of apparent nothingness, the spaciousness, the open feeling that sometimes arises in response to the question, that spaciousness that can arise when you ask yourself, what am I without thoughts and ideas? What am I if there are no emotions? What am I if there are no memories? Is that spaciousness the same as the space that arises at the end of I am? What am I if there are no words, if there are no thoughts, if there are no memories? What am I? Allowing my attention to nestle into the back heart. Letting yourself be inside the ground that arises. The space that arises. In the wake of that question that actually asks you to look at yourself as you are without thoughts, without any ideas, without emotions, without memories. If you let all that go, what are you? Can you let yourself just feel that sense of existing, of being, where there aren't any words or thoughts or memories or emotions, where there's just being, presence? You might want to stretch a bit, move your legs, or maybe not. We're going to be continuing our conversation about awareness practice, and part of what I'm going to do tonight is kind of talk around and inside this kind of pointing out of awareness, just letting us all settle into being present to the very subtle ground of ourselves. And perhaps in the course of today's practice, in the conversation, you might begin to experience greater clarity or greater depth or just a little bit more time inside your own spacious being. There are quite a few of you in this course who are longtime meditators, and some of you are practitioners who've done a lot of concentrative or focused practice. Some of you have done more of an insight practice, a kind of mindfulness practice, and some of you, like me, especially if you've been studying with me for a while, have experimented with different approaches to suchness, to beingness, to the great heart, great mind space that isn't just the goal of our meditation, but is actually what we are, what we never are not, what we can't get away from, even though we certainly get out of touch with it. But I know that from some of the questions I've gotten this week that some of you are experiencing that slight jarring feeling that can arise when you have an established meditation practice, when you kind of have a meditation comfort zone, and I don't mean to imply comfort zone in the negative sense of the word, but that ease and restlessness that restfulness that some of you have been writing in about your restlessness also, but that restfulness that you can kind of enter into after several years of meditation. And there's some of you who are just starting your practice, so restfulness is punctuated by experiences of its opposite, and that's also part of the process. But sometimes when we start to do a practice like this, this deconstruction practice, I can't remember if I said this last week, but it's very interesting to note that the practices that are part of what's often called jnana yoga or the yoga of knowledge are actually practices for deconstructing knowledge, that is, for dismantling the ordinary sense of self as we know it. And as such, it will bring up a lot. It'll bring up frustration. It'll bring up the sense of not doing it right. And it'll bring up restlessness. So, in fact, I often find that in these classes, in this particular class, for some people, there's a kind of firestorm that starts. So all sorts of verbal answers come up to the question. Questions like, am I doing this wrong? As someone wrote in today, tantrum, you start to have tantrums. And I want to say a little bit more about that in a few minutes, because actually the anger that sometimes comes up or the grief that sometimes comes up are very relevant, actually, to the process of deconstructing your understanding, your ideas about yourself. Because, of course, part of what you're doing here is moving past your persona, and everyone's persona is a kind of coping mechanism that in many ways exists to keep us from having to deal with what's underneath, with what's in the basement. So meditation, especially this kind of deconstructive meditation, will start to bring that out. One of the ways when we're inside the practice and we're actually sitting to deal with this tendency, first of all, the tendency to give yourself conceptual answers to the question, what am I? Or to look for answers, or to rebel, you know, why am I doing this? This is stupid. It's just to keep asking the question, even to the answers that come up. So you say, without that thought, what am I? If it's a highly charged emotional thought, it might take a little discipline to keep asking. But it's very, very powerful. Without that thought, what am I? Without that emotion, what am I? What am I really? There's a a contemporary teacher whom I like a lot, who teaches this kind of practice, who spent several years questioning every single idea that he took to be reality until he had deconstructed himself back down to the very bare sense of what is the reality that doesn't change, the reality that doesn't go away. And that's actually what we're doing. We are doing it to the extent that we're willing to engage in it, and I've found that at different times we're willing to go deeper than we are at others. It doesn't really matter how deep you go at this particular moment, because asking these questions are going to start to bring up the reality that doesn't change. Even if you feel like you're not very good at it, even when the process of self-inquiry is actually something that we have to do very deliberately and very consciously, once we start the process, it's going to start going on its own, and it's going to start coming up really as an antidote to certain thoughts and feelings that we are very used to falling into and tripping ourselves up with. So, for example, without that thought, I'm such a flake. What am I? Without that thought, I'm worthless. What am I? You know, without those dark thoughts, without impatience, what am I? Without this kind of swampy, I don't know if I'll ever be loved, what am I? And one of the secrets to doing this process, one of the things that really makes it transformative, is having real curiosity. In other words, wanting to know, not being satisfied with the answers, not being satisfied until that underlying reality, which wants to show herself to you, wants to show himself to you, does so, shows up. So I want to speak to one of the questions that, and one of the issues that shows up when we start doing witness practices. Because one of the first things we come up with, as we mentioned last week, when we start to practice meditation with a witness, is that we get in touch with an observing awareness that's very similar to the kind of self-conscious, self-observing mental experience that many of us have had for most of our lives. You know, there's a version of the ego. I had it very strongly for, I would say, the first 35 years of my life, which is just always sort of sitting over your shoulder watching and commenting on whatever you're doing. And there's a witness, a watcher, that's subtler than that, which is often the first intimation of the witness that comes up as you start asking this question. One of the great teachers of non-dual awareness, Nisargadatta Maharaj, whom Jeremy mentioned in his email in the listserv, like to talk about how there's an observer in us that's an observer of the mind. It's not the full witness. It's not the inner self. It's an observer that arises to observe each thought. In other words, it's not the knower beyond the mind. It's the witness, the watcher, that's a part of the mind. Every single thought you have trails a piece of you that knows you're thinking, that's observing that thought. Oh, why am I having that thought? And it comments, why am I having that thought? Was that a good thought to have? Was that a bad thought to have? It's not that we're always aware of that observer of the thought, but it's always there. And one of the reasons why it's important to keep questioning, to keep going, what am I without this thought or that thought, is to begin to notice at a deeper and deeper level what it is that's seeing. Because as you keep asking the question, you do go beyond the observer that's part of the mind. In other words, you go beyond that initial superficial witness to the witness of the witness, the one who's simply present as an aware intelligence to the whole panoply of what's going on, including your inner critic, your inner judge, and your inner observing ego. It's often called in psychoanalysis and psychotherapeutic processes the observing ego. The one who knows you're being an asshole. The one who knows that you just felt something very beautiful. There's a knower beyond that, and that's where we're going, and that's why this inquiry is so rigorous. In Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, the third sutra says that when the mind is full of thoughts, when the mind is restless, when there's lots of what are called vrittis or ripples in the mind, then the seer, the true knowing self, the real you, the seer identifies itself with what is seen. The seer identifies itself with what is seen. So the process of liberation at this level, at this stage, because there are many stages of liberation, but this initial process of liberation, the process of freeing yourself from identifying with the mind and emotions, is actually the process of freeing the seer, the pure knower, from identifying with itself with what is seen, including identifying itself with the observing ego, we can call it the false witness, with the witness that's part of the mind. And the teaching here, the idea here, the understanding here, that is Yoga 101, but you can experience it at deeper and deeper levels as you proceed in your journey. Anything that you can see is not the seer. Anything you can see is not the seer. And that includes your beautiful visions and the great fields of color that might open up. Those aren't the seer either, although they're very much more subtle aspects of yourself than your random thoughts. But getting back to thought, any thought you observe is not the seer. Any object is not the seer. In other words, it's not you. And as you do this self-questioning process and you start to recognize that there's an observer, a watcher, a witness, which you can almost make into an object of meditation. In other words, you can watch that part of your mind that's watching the other part of your mind. That's not the seer either. That's not the true seer. So anything that you identify with, anything that you can hook onto, is not it. This is the radical deconstruction process. Just keep going beyond. Keep going beyond, and you'll get to the depth, to the presence. And trust me, those of you who've been there know this, it's so unbelievably worth it. So what we always want to do is to start becoming aware of what is beyond or behind what we're experiencing, what's prior to what we're experiencing. So if you're worried, where is the awareness that's aware of your worry? Where's the awareness, this might be more helpful, that holds your worry? Doesn't have a comment on your worry, but just holds your worry. What's the sense of being present? The sense of being that's present before the emotion. Ramana Maharshi, who of course was one of the great, great sages of non-dual self-inquiry, which is the tradition that all this practice comes from, used to say, just be as you are when you're in that state that's prior to thought. It's a really powerful mantra, sutra. Just be as you are when you're in that state that's prior to thought. To that which is without memory, without perception, without thought. What's present to that? What's prior to that? What's aware of that? What's there when memory, perception, thought, idea, emotion are not present? What's behind them? So that's the core awareness. That's the deep witness. Last year, one of my good friends had gone to a meditation retreat And this friend of mine, who's quite a mature and beautiful seeker, has a deep longing for a mate, for a partner. It's like almost amounts to an obsession. And it's been several years since she had a partner. And she feels incomplete without a partner. And she's a person who does a lot of self-inquiry practice. But she's never been able to get to the bottom of this feeling that if she doesn't have a lover, if she's not in relationship, if she doesn't have a mate, that she's incomplete, there's something wrong with her. So she's been wondering for years, and there's always this feeling of needing a lover. And on this particular day at this meditation retreat, she had an insight to let herself be with the longing, to just feel the longing, and then look at what was prior to the longing, what's before the longing, what's underneath the longing. And in that inner gesture, you know, in that moving to what was prior, moving to what is beyond or behind the emotion, she suddenly was catapulted into this aware presence that actually holds the longing, that's the ground of the longing. And she was able for about an hour to fully experience both the longing and this deep ground of awareness that holds and contains the longing. And in that, she was able to be that person who longs for a mate, but also be that which holds that person, which contains that person, which knows that person. And with it, as I'm sure you've experienced, when you enter into that state, into that place, there's a deep contentment, a feeling of all-rightness. So the experience of coming to that which is beyond thoughts, beyond ideas, beyond memories, is this experience of pure spaciousness, pure emptiness, but it's a spaciousness that pulsates, it vibrates, it's full of dynamism. It's empty in the sense that the field of possibility is empty, but it's totally full in the sense that there's a deep capacity inside it that's going to manifest as love, that's going to manifest as tenderness, that's going to manifest as the capacity for action. Action that's not based on fear or ideas about what you ought to do, but genuine action that arises out of the space of pure consciousness. So I just want to tell you I guess it's a story. It's actually a teaching from Rumi. And it goes like this. A seeker comes to the door of the friend, the beloved, the door of God, the door of the inmost self, and knocks on the door asking to be let in, which is what we are all doing when we come into meditation. And the voice inside says, "Who's there?" And the seeker says, "It's me, it's Hamid." The voice from inside says, "We don't want any me here. We don't want any Hamid. Go away." So the seeker goes away and contemplates this experience for a while. And again, if you think about it, this is actually what we're doing when we do this inquiry practice. You know, that thought comes up, who am I? What am I? Oh, it's me. So anyway, he contemplates this experience for a while, and then because he's a real seeker, he really wants to go in, he comes back. And he knocks again, and the voice inside says, "Who's there?" The seeker says, "A lover of God." And the voice says, "We don't want any lovers of God here." Now, that's kind of a shocking statement for a lover of God, but the seeker takes it. He goes away. And after a while, he comes back and knocks again. The voice inside says, "Who's there?" And the seeker says, He's figured this out, right? He says, "Pure awareness." The voice says, "Go away, pure awareness. We don't want you here." And this goes on and on and on. And this is the deconstruction process until there comes a moment when the seeker approaches the door. And the voice from inside says, "Who's there?" And the seeker is silent. And that's the moment when the door opens. Jeremy was sharing an experience of how sometimes when he's in the silence and the spaciousness where I am reverberates, that silence will open. It's the door opening. And inside that spaciousness, there'll be this overwhelming love. One of my teachers used to say that awareness opens into love, and love opens into awareness. They're actually two sides of the spaciousness. And as I've listened to this story and contemplated over the years, I've heard it and understood it in several different ways. When I first heard this story from my guru, I thought it was about how you have to kill the ego. You know, you have to annihilate yourself. It seemed sort of desperate and romantic and something that involves a great sacrifice. And I, over the years, the point of the story really shifted for me, I think, as I became more in tune with the I am awareness. And I began to realize that it's actually about the process of presenting yourself to yourself, about the stages of entering into the doorway of your own being, finding your way to that which is prior to thoughts. And when we first come into the presence of ourselves, we do come into the consciousness of being Sally, being Gina, being Jeremy, of feeling our very distinct energetic signature, our personal self-sense, which can be the ego self-sense, or it can be a deeper sense of our own energy, of our own essential energy. And we go a little deeper, we begin to come in contact with our tenderness, our affection. And if we go a little deeper, we come in contact with what's aware, with what is sometimes called the awarer, with being as a state of awareness. But the entrance to the self, the real entrance, takes place on an even deeper level than that. In other words, we're pure awareness, we're pure silence. And that's the mystery that arises as we let ourselves move through these phases. So, again, let's breathe into the heart. Let the breath come in and flow into the heart, into the center of the chest and in towards the back heart. And with the exhalation, see if you can let yourself flow into the presence behind the heart. And the inhalation comes in with I am. And with the exhalation, you just let yourself flow into rest in the spaciousness of that presence that exists behind the heart. That the heart inside the body, the heart center inside the body, just opens into that spacious heart behind the body. I am, and the space, both inside the heart, segueing into, opening into the great heart. The great heart that's full of tenderness. It's full of spaciousness that holds you. And with each breath, with each I am, see if you can allow yourself to move deeper into the great heart, still keeping your connection, the connection between the heart inside the body and the heart behind the body, just as a foothold. I am opening into the spaciousness behind the body. And with the exhalation, the sense of that space and the 360-degree awareness holds the body inside itself from that place of the heart. Let the I am reverberate with the inhalation into the presence behind the heart. And let the exhalation allow you to just rest in it, fall into it. Let it hold the you you think you are. We're flowing in and out of this inquiry. But even as you listen to me, you can allow your attention to ride the breath, to ride the awareness I am, to flow into the back heart, to let that space at the end of I am expand. In one of the great tantric texts, a question is asked of Shiva, what's the secret of experiencing the absolute truth? And Shiva says, when you find yourself in that absolute blissfulness that's present when the ego has dissolved and nothing is left but existence itself, that's the deepest reality. That's the true self. And you know, we talk around this just to kind of coax it forward, to hope it recognizes itself in the words and starts to become present for all of you, deeper and deeper. There's something about talking about this subtle suchness, this presence, that not only lets us tune into it, but actually invokes it, invites it. So, in the tradition of Vedanta, which is a tradition of deconstructing reality that we've been talking about, it's called the practice of not this, not this, or the path of neti, neti. I'm not my body, I'm not my thoughts, I'm not my emotions, I'm not my memories. I'm certainly not the desk and the chair and the meditation cushion. And then what am I if none of these things are there? I'm that which remains. I'm that which remains. I'm that which holds it. And what happens as you find yourself more and more inside that sense of spaciousness is that it gradually dawns on you that this pure spaciousness, this pure awareness, is actually inside everything else. It's the ground of everything that you experience, but it's also in the energy particles of the desk and the chair and certainly of your body. And you begin to have the awareness that the experience that it's not this, not this, not this, that I am not this, I'm not this, and yet at the same time, I'm all this, I'm iti, iti, it's the Sanskrit, which means all this, I'm all this, I'm the crow landing on the fence in front of my window, I'm the sound of the siren in the city, I'm all this is me. Awareness is all of this. All of this is inside awareness. It's not always so easy to actually feel yourself as everything, but it's not so hard to recognize that everything you're experiencing is inside awareness. You know, one of the classic, beautiful ways to notice this is to ask yourself, and those of you who are not deep in meditation, can ask yourself now, is my mind inside this room? Is my awareness inside this room? Or is this room inside my awareness? Both are true, right? Your awareness is inside the room because your body's inside the room, but the room is also inside your awareness. And so I'm so is my voice, and so are all of us. All of us here in this gathering, even though we're invisible to each other, we're all inside each other's awareness. And for each of us, our awareness is inside this space that we're holding together. So it's both. You are this utterly solitary, unconditioned awareness that's untouched by anything. And this single, solitary awareness of yours is utterly, absolutely held in the awareness that holds everything. And it's only because of that presence of awareness of this same awareness, this unchanging awareness, that any experience is possible. It's why they say to people who have a relative in a coma that you shouldn't talk about anything you don't want your relative to hear while you're sitting there, because even when we're in a coma, awareness is present. Even when we're in deep sleep, awareness is present. A couple of months ago, I was deeply asleep. A friend of mine came into the room, engaged me in conversation for an hour, got up and left, and I never knew what the conversation was. But she swears to me that we made a decision during that conversation, which she then went on to carry out the next morning because we'd already decided it. So awareness had been present, and yet there'd been no awareness, no conscious awareness of that presence. And in the same way, our deep awareness, our deep knowingness, our deep self is utterly present within our ordinary existence. But we're asleep to it. We're asleep to it. We don't notice it. So what we're doing is coaxing it forward. And you might like to stretch again, but as you listen to my voice, see if you can start to recognize that in between the words, in between the sounds, surrounding and even interpenetrating the sensations that you might feel in your body, there is that which is the silence that exists between words. And see if you can focus not so much on the words as on the space around the words. And see if you can focus not so much on the sensations in the body as on the space that contains your body. And see if you can notice that around my words, there's a kind of pulsating silence. And notice as you listen into the silence that in the space between words, the words actually arise and subside into silence. They come up and then they fade back. And the same thing is actually happening in your internal space. Thoughts and images come up. They arise out of the ground of stillness, and they fall back into it. They fall back into this vibrating silence at the heart of your experience. So as you listen to me, your attention is on the silence, the wordlessness, out of which words arise and into which they subside. You're just listening. And as you listen into the silence, see if you can take in the sounds as pure sound. Perhaps you notice that as your awareness expands inside the silence between words, that your awareness is becoming more spacious. You can close your eyes and just feel your way into that space between the words. And perhaps as you do, you might also have the experience that the boundaries between your body and the space around your body are more of a pulsing energetic dynamic feeling. Maybe you can sense a subtle pulsing alive quality of your awareness, of your knowing, of the intelligence, the knowingness that takes in sounds, that holds the sensations in the body, that notices thoughts. And perhaps you can let yourself fall back into that quality of awareness that can know thoughts, hold thoughts, be present to sounds and sensations, that's present to the breath, present to everything in your experience. And see if you can let yourself fall back into that awareness, hang out. with that awareness that's allowing your experience. See if you can let that background awareness come forward. Everything is arising and subsiding inside this knowing presence that is you, that is awareness itself. What is it that, without thought or memory or emotion, knows itself as pure existence, as pure presence? Breath is flowing in and out through the heart, flowing into the back heart, and you let yourself open into that spaciousness, that suchness that's behind you and around you. You let yourself relax into it. Just opening into that limitless spaciousness. And you notice that it's vibrating, it's full of energy. It's contentless, but it's not empty. And if you inwardly look to one side, you see that it has no boundaries, it has no top, it has no bottom. It's just open. It's just spacious. And in that spaciousness, there's an alive, intelligent quality, and there's a quality of tenderness. And if a thought wants to arise, allow it to melt into the thought, I am. Into the back heart, the spacious presence at your back, I am flowing in and releasing into pure spaciousness. You're just letting yourself be there with the breath, the great heart. I am. And the spacious awareness, the presence that opens up at the end of I am. the awareness that holds your life. Inside the great heart, at the heart of I Am, there's the invisible one who meditates on you. You move through the process. And even though we can ask and answer these questions on the listserv, it's also very nice to hear each other's voices. So I'm going to put on Q&A mode, and you'll be able to unmute yourself by pressing star 7. To press star 7 and unmute yourself. And if anyone can talk, to say what you'd like to say or ask what you'd like to ask.
Hi, Sally, this is Paula.
Hi, Paula.
Hi. I just wanted to say that what I often feel is a sense of presence that I am here, and yet there's this soft, sort of flowing, almost without boundedness. Just a soft sort of presence.
And does it feel like you're inside it, or that it's around you, or that it's beside you?
Like all throughout.
All throughout, that it's flowing through you. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's beautiful. That is actually the truth. You know, there's the what we could call the solid self, as it were, mm-hmm. expressed as the body or as the personality, the solidified personality. And then there's the presence of the essence self, the true self that is an energy that's a flowing sense of presence that is, as you say, is soft, it's tender, it's very deeply energetic. It sounds like you're experiencing it in a way that's mm-hmm. very energetic.
Yeah.
And that's, so you can very softly focus on that and let it expand for you.
Mm-hmm.
And just see where it takes you.
Okay.
See where that...
Thank you.
That and the energy takes you. You're welcome. Thank you. Someone else? Now that the spell of silence is broken... Hello?
Kathy, can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you.
I have, for a long time, had really spontaneous experiences of what I call the one spirit, especially Shiva, Shakti, Jitsa, mm-hmm. right, or the different aspects of the one spirit. And lots of blissful experiences, but when I sit down to meditate, I can't do it, and I can't get in there. It feels like I can't go more deeply past that, because every time I sit to meditate, either I will get very blissful, or I will just not be able to go back in, not be able to go in. So,
what do you mean not be able to go in? You mean you're sort of on the surface of your mind, or you're thinking, or what? What do you mean?
Well, I go so far. I get a nice blissful state, but when I'm not trying to meditate, I reach very sweet, blissful, expanded, connected states. And when I try to meditate, when I don't try to meditate, I'm fine. When I try to meditate, I get some bliss and some. But then I just feel like I'm constricted within, and it isn't with thoughts. It's just I get some nice bliss, or I get a blue circle around my heart chakra, or I get this lovely blissful feeling. But I don't know what I'm doing that's preventing me from going deeper.
How long do you sit normally?
Well, actually, I'm from a Kashmir Shaivite Hindu background, and so I've had Shaktipat. I really haven't done a formal meditation. It's been Shaktipat for a long time.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So I do an I am meditation, it's called, from my guru, Amma. I do that, but that's quite different from what we're doing.
And the question I was asking is, is how long do you sit when you sit? Or do you do the practice mostly when you're walking around?
Well, I do it for about 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
Okay. So here's what I would say, and this is the experience you're talking about is not untypical of people who have that kind of connection with a charismatic guru and who have the Shakti moving. It's kind of like the Shakti will come up and you'll have an experience of opening or blissfulness or joy that's just a walking around experience, and is very beautiful and a gift of the Shakti and actually one of the qualities of that type of tradition. I know it very well myself. And one of the tendencies that one has in that when one is a kind of a child of the Shakti is to sit in meditation and in a certain sense let yourself be stopped, as it were, by the walls of the mind. And often, I have to say, it's really a matter of letting yourself sit for a little bit longer. Since you have a regular practice, I would say sit for 45 minutes and work with the practice that we're doing, and let yourself, you'll actually begin to segue past it. The Shakti will start to segue you past the superficial, what you're calling the superficial experience. It's really, I would say, a question of letting yourself just naturally go deeper. So try that this week. Just take the time to try that.
I will. Thank you so much.
Let me know what happens.
All right. Thank you.
And what's your name?
Surya Sati.
You didn't say it, or I didn't hear it.
Surya Sati.
Surya Sati?
Yes.
Thank you, Surya Sati. Okay. I just want to know who it is that's reporting to me. So
thank
when you do,
I appreciate
you. So it's very beautiful to actually, one of the reasons I love to have people share their experiences, their questions, is because we're always coming in from such different places. A person who comes in from one of the Shakti traditions often has a particular kind of experience, and someone who comes in from a mindfulness tradition or a Zen tradition has quite a different experience. And each of them is valid. Each of them has its own depth. And each of them has its own, I hate to use this word, but its own type of obstructions. And so as we talk about it, as we kind of put our experience into the pot of our shared awareness, we start to become more aware of the art that we can exercise in meditation. One of the reasons that I give this class and that I personally love this self-inquiry practice is not simply for what it offers us in meditation, but for the way we can use it in daily life. So many of the feeling states that arise as we move into our inner spaciousness come from held emotions, held feelings that we aren't necessarily so aware of as we go through our day, but which we can begin to become aware of in meditation. And as we recognize them and learn to deconstruct them a little, then we can also do the same thing in the course of life crises or uncomfortable days. So one of the sometimes qualities of consciousness that we come across that Surya Sati actually was referring to is what we sometimes call the contraction of ego. In other words, consciousness contracts itself into a kind of accustomed, constricted state, which is the normal, ordinary self-contraction that allows us to occupy mind state and go through the karmic experiences that we go through in this lifetime. And at some point, all of us, as we go deeper in meditation, are going to come across one version or another, and often many versions of the self-contraction. It's the actual contraction of consciousness, and by contraction, I literally mean contraction. It's, you know, consciousness in entering into a human experience, spirit having a human experience, as some great contemporary teacher said, that very memorable phrase, literally contracts itself. And the way we work with the sense of contraction, whether it's a sense of, you know, just kind of boring blissfulness for those of you who are bored with blissfulness, or something that's not quite so pleasant, or just the feeling of being stuck and small, the way we work with it is to notice the contraction, kind of name it as self-contraction, and be present with it without trying to make it go away. Just let yourself be present with what's going on and breathing with it. And to be with the contraction, to be willing to sit with the contraction, kind of the way you'd sit with a friend who was sad, without trying to jolly them out or make them feel better. This is what allows the contraction to start to release. The tantric understanding about all the energies in our being is that they're all expressions of beingness. They're all expressions of beingness. So have the understanding that the constriction you might experience in consciousness is made of energy, it's made of consciousness itself. And gently, gently, gently breathe with it, flow into the back heart, and just notice how it changes, how it transforms, how it evanesces. And eventually, maybe now, maybe in a few minutes, maybe later in the week, maybe when you're not even in meditation, the contraction will just very gently release and take you deeper. And part of making this, doing this particular practice is not making the contraction wrong or bad or thinking, oh my God, I'm not going deep enough. It isn't wrong. It's just contraction. It's just the way consciousness is used to holding itself. And if you have that sense of allowing and at the same time having the intention to be present with what's there, and then perhaps to ask the question, without this contraction, what am I? Just having that intention to be present with it, to allow it to be, to question it in a non-manipulative way, lets it shift, lets it change. So you'll be getting another homework assignment. And I'll be asking you to keep working at different times in and out of meditation with the question. And the important thing about this kind of practice, this self-inquiry practice, is not that you keep repeating the question like a mantra, but that the question comes out of a curiosity to access that underlying ground. You can change the question, or you could not ask it as a question. But the thought is, what is it that's me? What is it that's deeper than what I'm experiencing? What is it that underlies all this? What is it that I've been longing to meet all these years? What am I beyond the longing? What is it that meditates on me all the time? So the question can change. What's transformative is to allow the question to keep arising. And when you're having a bad day, or feeling agitated, or feeling happy, ask yourself, without this feeling, what am I? Or if I don't have this thought, this agitation, this good feeling, or this bad feeling, or this stressed feeling, if I don't identify myself as this or that, what am I? What is it that's present to my upset and to my happiness? So it's this question, this tendency to question, is going to shift your experience. So please bring yourself back into the heart, back into the breath. If you want to, you can put your hand over your heart just to help you bring your attention to the heart region. And let the breath come in and out through the heart, through the center of the chest. And allow the breath to be a kind of energetic release, as though each breath comes into the heart and flows towards the back of the heart. And with the exhalation, let the exhalation just kind of propel your awareness into the presence at the back of the heart, the great, loving, tender, great heart energy that has your back. And you might want to just lean into it the way you'd lean into a backrest. And with your awareness flowing with the breath, let the inhalation flow with I am. And as the breath flows out, let yourself lean into the heart, into the space at the end of I am. Just let yourself rest. Breathing in, I am. Letting your awareness rest in the space that's both within and behind the heart, that surrounds you from the heart, that holds you, that is you, the great heart you. Let yourself rest in the space at the end of I am, the space in the heart. And have a beautiful evening. We offer our practice asking that all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. Let our practice be of benefit to